The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Monday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, and of course, SiriusXM channel 158. It's a numbers game. Gil Alexander with Wyatt Tomchek in one more day for the vacationing Kelly Midland. How you doing, sir?
It's a rough weekend. The Damian Lillard news really stunk, but I did win a NASCAR bet, so at least there was some positive on it. But also can't confirm, Kelly is back in Vegas.
Kelly is back in Vegas. He will be back with us. He needs a day to decompress. That's the Kelly Bidlin way.
Well, what was it? He had such a little time in between his connecting flight that he didn't know if he was going to make it in time.
Well, he made it. He'll be back tomorrow. But we've had a great time with you with the what with the WrestleMania. You telling us about all the teams you like and random stuff about all of your life. It's been fantastic.
The WrestleMania, right? We'll remember it for the rest of the year.
Yes. By the way, Dame, with the ruptured Achilles, of course, you weren't winning that series anyway. Sorry.
I vehemently disagree. Okay, we had him right sure. Where we wanted him. Well, just bad luck. Fourth year in a row, the Bucks have had a major injury in the playoffs.
Yeah, I'm sure that's what prevented them from winning multiple titles, right? Is that what you're saying?
No, they would have won the series against the Celtics if Middleton was healthy.
It was quite lucky winning the first one, but anyway. Jake Hahn on the NHL in the next segment. Carl Sack on the NBA playoffs right after that. Paul Spohr on baseball. Wes Reynolds will be here. Adam Burke. We'll talk MLB and NFL with us here coming up momentarily. I will say some stuff about the Skins, or the Commanders, as they call them now, moving back to the site of RFK. That'll be a little later on. I don't know, maybe 100 men versus a gorilla. I don't know. We'll get into all of it. We'll get into all of it on the show today.
That was such a great... Some of the stuff that pops up on Twitter.
One tweet goes viral. It's ridiculous. Jason Weingarten would not stop texting me about it. He wanted me to ask every guest what their opinion was on this. I don't think I'll do that, but I'll give mine a little later on. Okay, Shador, can we just start with this? Let's get this out of the way. Because what was beyond the NBA and NHL, which, by the way, the playoffs have just been spectacular in both. Beyond that, of course, the biggest story here in North American sports over the weekend was Shador Sanders falling all the way to the fifth round. The Browns trade up to grab him with the sixth pick in the fifth round. That after Cleveland had already drafted Dylan Gabriel earlier in the draft. So they end up with two quarterbacks, two running backs in the first five rounds. That had never been done before in the history of the modern draft. What are they doing? I have no idea whatsoever. We'll get to that momentarily. But I just want to say, you know, the whole thing is fascinating from so many perspectives. And in the end, what were the three things at play? His playing ability, his what was perceived as a brash attitude, a cocky attitude, and then his dad, Dion Looming. And you can kind of ask the parlor question, the sports bar question of break that pie down in percentages of why you think this happened. What percentage of it was just his player, his talent evaluation? What percentage of it was his demeanor? What percentage of it was his father looming? And it's probably some alchemy of all three of those things. I won't assign, you know, percentages that I think, but I think that's the ultimate question with this. And, you know, I had texted some folks on Friday and Saturday about, you know, that we hadn't seen when he had dropped out of the first round and then out of the second and third. I remember texting, I think it was Saturday morning, where I was like, come to think of it, last year we saw all of this tape. Maybe I missed it this year. Maybe it was just me who missed it. But last year we saw all this tape of, and it was specifically Brian Daboll of the Giants, who put prospective rookie quarterbacks, guys that were going to be drafted early in the 2024 draft, through the ringer of sort of like he would call out a play, right? They had this all on camera. He'd be like, X slide, R20 left, whatever the heck is going on here. What are you looking for on this play? And Jaden Daniels and Bo Nix, I believe it was, and certainly Caleb Williams, and everybody sort of aced it with their answers to this question. I didn't see any of that this year with Shador or anybody else for that matter. Maybe that was just me missing it. But I sort of threw that around, and then moments after that, Todd McShay comes out with this report about Daboll specifically, saying, quote, Shador didn't have a great interview with Brian Daboll in a private visit. He told the Daily News, McShay did, Todd McShay, an install package came in, preparation wasn't there for it, he got called out on it, he didn't like that, and then Brian Daboll didn't appreciate him not liking that. McShay went on to say that he had talked to two NFL people in the league, independent of each other, both of whom said they didn't feel like Shador particularly cared that much as to what those organizations thought of him. But he did go on to say they also thought he was a great pure passer, throws guys open. There was some similarity to Caleb Williams in that respect, except for the fact that, and this is an interesting phrase, that he's a fraction of the athlete Caleb is. So, you know, all those things are interesting to me. Colin Cowherd had a fascinating point on Friday after we left a numbers game, which is, you know, if you went to Nick Saban and asked about prospective Alabama players heading into the draft, Nick Saban would give you an honest answer about all of his players. Famously in the Parcells Saban documentary, because those guys are two great friends, Saban actually lamented to Parcells, "I can't believe some of these GMs don't come to me and ask me about my own players." And Cowherd pointed out that you couldn't do that with Colorado, right? Because Deion was in place and it's just a family affair. And so you could never get an honest sort of assessment of Shador from that respect. And then there's the, you know, some other great points made about the fact that how much of Shador's, you know, canonization, if you will, as a college player was built in as the ESPN hype machine of Colorado football to begin with. We were all part of it, right? I used to say on the show, for the content, I hope it's great because it's a fascinating show to watch. But maybe the last 2 years was not exactly what we thought it was, right? Because given the layers of hype on all of that, it's all to some degree been manufactured. I thought that was an interesting point. And where does the Travis Hunter greatness begin and the Shador greatness end? Greatness in quotes, if you will. So it was just a fascinating thing from so many different standpoints. I was amused by a couple things as well. One was the ease with which teams that had a built-in excuse not to draft Shador waxed so gloriously about him. So Jerry Jones, who obviously gave the big contract to Dak, they're not going to draft Shador, saying what a great kid he is. Sean Payton, who had obviously drafted Bo Nix had a great rookie season, talking about how all the league's going to regret it. He's going to come back and he's going to make them pay for it. Real easy for both Jerry Jones and Sean Payton and teams like that to make those comments. I thought that was interesting. And then the other part about this, if you're watching the ESPN broadcast through Thursday, through Friday, through Saturday especially, Mel Kiper has up that graphic. They have up that graphic for Mel, the best available. And they left that best available graphic, right? Once the first round was like halfway over, maybe not even halfway over, and Shador ended up being his number one left best available player, number one remaining best available player. They left that graphic up in perpetuity for day after day, deep into the weekend, and it was just like, oh my God, are they going to take this down?
Man, I tell you what, I want somebody to defend me in life like Mel Kiper did Shador Sanders. That was unbelievable. Did you see the argument that him and Reese Davis got into?
I did not. No.
Saturday. Oh, people were like, it takes a lot to get Reese Davis mad, and I think Mel was just kind of going over the top with the criticism that people were having against Shador.
Well, I did see the clip of him saying that the NFL talent evaluators don't get the quarterback position right. He's been doing it for 30 years. I did see that. I will say this, though. When all is said and done, all right, so just from a football perspective now, Shador actually ends up, and by the way, the Browns brass, that famous video of them after having drafted Shador, didn't look consensus happy, let's put it that way. Some said, oh, we were just tired. Some speculated it came down from ownership. Whatever the case, they didn't look like they were that thrilled. But in the end, their quarterback room, remember, you can't have a room without a building. Their quarterback room has not Deshaun Watson, because Deshaun Watson had it re-ruptured his Achilles, so he's not going to play. But then there's Kenny Pickett, who's already proclaimed himself to be the incumbent starter. They have Joe Flacco, who, of course, had that great comeback player of the year flourish 2 years ago. The drafted just before Dillon Gabriel and Shador himself. From a Shador Sanders perspective, he's actually got to be pretty, beyond the fact that he dropped all the way to the fifth round, which he's obviously not happy about, regardless of what they say. He does have to be kind of happy about where he ended up, because from his perspective, he has to actually feel like he could do this. I'm not sure if that's delusional or not. I have no prediction about that, but he has to absolutely think that himself. In fact, at DraftKings, they put up quarterback to take first snap for the Browns, week one in the NFL. Kenny Pickett is your short shot at +120. Shador is at plus 225, followed by Joe Flacco now down to 3-1. By the way, this was 7-1, I believe, at some point Friday or Saturday. There was a terrible number on this. Maybe it was longer. It was even longer at one point. Dylan Gabriel plus 650. There's Deshaun at 18-1. Please do not bet Deshaun. This is not a Dr. Chow thing. By the way, Dr. Chow, I was surprised getting back to your Dame Lillard thing. I was shocked that after he proclaimed Dame Lillard to probably have a ruptured Achilles, that he didn't say, oh, Dame should be available for game three in the next series should the Bucks advance after his nonsense with Aaron Rodgers last year, corroborating Aaron Rodgers' ridiculous medicine. But if you were to bet this right now, I still think Joe Flacco 3-1 is probably the safest play. I'm not betting it, just full disclosure. But Flacco did have a more ridiculous number here in the most recent days. Shadur shorter than Flacco is like, wow.
The wild thing with this, Gil, is that out of those two quarterbacks that they drafted, they're going to probably have to cut one of those.
Oh, you can't have four.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and if you cut Dylan Gabriel, it's like, why did you spend that high of a draft pick on him?
There is no sense to drafting Gabriel and then drafting Sanders. This is not an RG3 Kirk Cousins situation. This was something different. And who knows what was at play, but it was just a fascinating... Listen, before this, we always thought like the big drop in the NFL draft was Aaron Rodgers going from the top of the draft to 24. This was from the top of the draft. Remember, his original positional over-under was 3.5 at Caesars. And he gets drafted in the fifth round. We've never seen anything like that before. The NFL soap opera in April. It's fantastic. NHL playoffs. What a game last night between the Oilers and the Kings. Jake Hahn on the other side with all his picks tonight. That's next. Numbers Game. VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The NBA playoffs are here, and so is the VSiN Killer Sports NBA Playoff Challenge. We've invited 15 sharp minds from the world of VSiN and Killer Sports to go head-to-head, making 38 picks each from the start of the playoffs all the way through the NBA Finals. That's a total of 570 NBA playoff picks, all available to VSiN Pro subscribers. Picks are locked in 1 hour before the first game each day, so you'll have fresh insights to guide your bets every step of the postseason. And right now, you can get full VSiN Pro access through August 1st for just $59. Don't miss this playoff edge. Head to VSiN.com/subscribe to sign up today. This VSiN Killer Sports NBA Playoff Challenge has been awesome. Obviously, the first round still in full swing here, so everybody's trying to get... There were 20 picks in the first round. Again, full game side, full game total. And right now, and again, varying degrees, you know, varying number of picks made by each person because they have the whole first round to make 20 picks. But right now, Doug Kazarian in the lead. Doug is 14-3, killing it. 14-3, he's in the lead right now. Again, there's others who can try to get there, although he looks like he's almost clinched the first round lead. Steve Fezzik, who has picked his allotted 20 already, 13-7, 13 wins in the clubhouse. And our own Kelly Bidelon in third place. Kelly Bidlin at 10-5 in third place with five more picks to make here. Folks better get their picks in because some of these games, with the exception of the Nuggets and the Clippers, this round could be over quicker than we think in the NBA, even though some of the series have been competitive. But when you look up at the scoreboard in the series tally, only that one, 2-2, although obviously the Rockets will have something to say about that tonight. We will get to the NBA with Carl Sack. Let's talk some NHL, though, first with Jake Hahn, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. Jake, the co-host of The Point, the Fantasy Hockey Show on SiriusXM NHL at jhahn4. That's JHAHN4. Jake, how you doing, man?
Yo, I'm doing great. I'm coming off of a hockey-filled weekend, to be honest, so I'm fired up for another full week of NHL playoff hockey. I was in attendance Saturday night at the Canadian Tire. Nothing felt more Canadian than being at a place called the Canadian Tire Center to watch two Canadian teams, specifically from Ontario, Toronto, Ottawa, go toe-to-toe. Fan bases, basically a 50-50 split in the building, going back and forth, drinking Molson Canadian. So nothing was more Canadian than what I was doing on Saturday night.
The Battle of Ontario, Jake. Everybody knows that. Toronto trying to win a Stanley Cup for the first time since 1967. I just mentioned that, you know, the NBA, with the exception of the Clippers-Nuggets series, and again, we'll see about the Rockets-Warriors tonight, but that's the only one that's gone 2-2 through four games, as opposed to the Western Conference in the NHL, where all four series are locked up at two games apiece because they're hockeying. That's what happens in the NHL playoffs. And for those who missed it, the reason that it ended up that way is the Edmonton Oilers last night knotting up the series against the Kings with a 4-3 win in overtime. They were down 3-1, then they were down 3-2, and Bouchard scores with 29 seconds left. Then they go to overtime. Edmonton just dominates the overtime period. They had a million chances to score. They finally get a power play, and Draisaitl puts it in, and Edmonton wins it. It was unbelievable, and we were talking a little bit about this off-air, you and I, Jake. I'm no hockey X's and O's guy, but the Kings' inability to clear the puck late in regulation that ultimately resulted in Bouchard scoring, the guys in the studio at TNT were just losing their minds over this.
Anybody that played hockey any level is going to be pulling their hair out if they have any hair at that specific play. Whether you're a goaltender, we see a guy like Henrik Lundqvist on the panel from time to time. Whether you're a defenseman, a forward who was supposed to get that puck out, in that instance it's Quentin Byfield, a young player who's taken some major strides this year. He's actually been excellent for LA and he's trending in the right direction. So there's a lot of positives with Quentin Byfield, and he scored a couple big goals in the playoffs already, but he can't get that puck out at the line. And that just, even if you ice the puck there, okay, you take the D zone draw, not the worst thing. You kind of hit the reset button, but there's a chance just to kind of chip it out to the neutral zone, kill an extra 20, 25 seconds. So huge mistake, great play by the Oilers on the other end to keep that puck in. And they just seem to find a way sometimes in these situations. And even though LA is probably looking at this series, Gil, and thinking we should be up at least 3-1. We feel like we could have won both of these games in Edmonton and maybe even swept the series. Ultimately, they let both get away. Questionable challenge in the third game that led to an Oilers game-winning goal. So we're 2-2 somehow. It's probably been the most entertaining series in terms of drama so far. And now it shifts back to LA, where LA looked really good in games 1 and 2. Maybe we're just looking at a homer-type series here where eventually Edmonton's going to have to find a way to win LA, and they look really strong on home ice this year. But huge mistake by Quentin Byfield there. There's no doubt.
Let's get tonight's games out of the way. We have the final game 4, if you will, and the first game 5 in the NHL playoffs. So it is we start with the final game 4. It's the Lightning and Panthers. You liked the Lightning before this series started. This is the series where nobody has won on their home ice yet. Game 4 here as Florida tries to take a 3-1 lead and the Lightning try to knot it up. Which way are you going here, or are you doing something a little more creative?
Yeah, well, I did like the Lightning before this series, Gil. You and I spoke about this, but this was one of those. And I think when you're making picks for all 8 series, sometimes you want a bit of a mulligan, or at least you want to see the teams play a couple of games and go, okay, maybe I misread this. Maybe there's some new information I can take from what I've watched in these early games. And I think my biggest takeaway from the first week of NHL playoffs was that the Panthers still look like the Panthers from last year. And maybe they were slow playing the regular season a little bit. They weren't fully healthy. Now, Tampa does get that big win on Saturday to get themselves back in this series. Obviously, the job's not done, and they're going to have to win again tonight to get their home ice advantage back, bring it 2-2 back to Tampa Bay. But I've seen so much that I like in Florida in this series so far that I'm not ready to go to Tampa on the money line tonight. I think it's a stay away in terms of a side. But one prop angle I do like in this game, Gil, is Jake Guentzel for his over 2.5 shots on goal. You just look at the minutes, the ice time. He's been a playoff performer throughout his career, mostly with Pittsburgh. Now he's playing with Tampa Bay in a great situation on that line, on that power play as well. He's been boom or bust through 3 games. We've seen 6 shots, 0 shots, and 5 shots from him. So he's snuck a 0 in there with the 6 and the 5, but I think he's going to be firing tonight in a must-win game for the Tampa Bay Lightning. So I like the value we're getting on Guentzel to get the 3 shots on goal tonight.
All right, Stars Avalanche game 5, series knotted up at 2 apiece. The Stars have won both of their games in overtime. The Avalanche have won their games by a combined 8 goals. So that's what this is. We're back in Dallas tonight, though, for Game 5. Just anecdotally, I don't hear one person giving the Stars a chance here. Are you among those?
I think if I had to take a play on the money line, Gil, it would be, and again, I like Colorado coming into the series. Heck, I like Colorado to maybe go all the way this year. But Dallas plus money on home, there's been some disrespect to the Stars in this series. Now, a lot of it is injury related. They're down their best defenseman in Miro Heiskanen, and one of their better forwards in Jason Robertson. But they do have depth on this Dallas Stars roster, and I think that's shown. I think that's the reason why they're hanging in this series. They found a way to win a couple of close games, and that's what you have to do come playoff time. So full credit to Dallas. Like I said, I think if I had to make a play on the money line, it would be the Stars as home dogs. I just think that's a pretty nice price. But the under is where I've been going in this series, Gil. Now, the under 6.5 has hit 3 of the 4 games so far. And in the game that it got really close was game one. It was a 5-1 final to the Colorado Avalanche. That was a 2-1 game with about 10 minutes left. So that was looking like a dead set under. Got a little weird at the end, but it still ended up cashing that under 6.5. So as we get closer and closer to the end of these series as well, I think we see less penalties. Games just get a little bit tighter, mostly played at even strength. So I'm going under 6.5. If you can't find a good number on it, I'd play the under 6, the flat 6 as well. But I try to find a good price on that 6.5 if I can.
All right, before you go here, Jake, I want to go through some of these adjusted series prices and see if any of these interest you at all. Panthers Lightning, we just talked about. Lightning down 2 games to 1. They're a plus 210 adjusted series price down a game. Hold your applause here till the end here, Jake. I'm curious what you'd be most into. Stars plus 135, knotted up at 2 apiece against the Avalanche. Ottawa, 9-1, down 3-1 to the Leafs. They would have to pull off the amazing 3-0 comeback, right, if they were to win. Devils 20-1, down 3-1 to the Canes, the Hurricanes. Wild plus 175 knotted up with the Golden Knights at 2 games apiece. The Kings and the Oilers are a relative coin flip. Canadiens 12-1, down 3-1 to the Caps. And the Blues plus 155, I believe that is, knotted up with the Winnipeg Jets at 2 games apiece.
As fun as it is to take a stab on one of those really big prices, right? Like a New Jersey, obviously a tough loss for them yesterday. You go down 3-1. Okay, now you're staring down the barrel of probably losing in 5 games because Carolina is just so good on home ice. They've shown me some signs in the last couple of games that maybe they can find a way. And that's just a huge price. You wouldn't have to bet much to feel a little something there. Ottawa 9-1. I think I would want a little bit bigger. I will be going to the game on Tuesday night to see if the Leafs can close it out. Now, the pressure is back on the Maple Leafs. Now, pressure-free a little bit to try to sweep in Ottawa. Now, you feel like you have to win on home ice, and sometimes this Leafs team has struggled with the pressure. But, Gil, I think the one I would actually play is the Minnesota Wild at plus 210. I really like how they've played this series against Vegas. I get that they're going to have to win another game at the Fortress, but they showed that they're very capable of doing that already in this series. And it's 2-2. Vegas gets the big win over the weekend, but I love the way that the Wild have been playing in this series. I think they're extremely live to win this.
Plus 175. Let's not get crazy with the plus 210, but you still played at plus 175.
Maybe less so. I'm seeing some bigger numbers out there.
Okay, yeah, shop around for sure.
Shop it around. See if you can find that plus 200.
For sure. NHL playoffs always lives up to the billing, man. It's been awesome. Yeah. Thank you, Jake.
It's been great, Gil. Always fun joining you. Have yourself a great week.
We will do it again here momentarily, at least in the coming days. Jake Hahn on the NHL. Carl Sack, NBA playoffs next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Don't forget about sharpplays.com, unmatched transparency with records updated daily, AI betting analysis, real-time global betting information, and alerts directly from the pros. That's sharpplays.com. Check it out. Skill Alexander, we had tweets at Beating the Book. Always appreciate the feedback. Sean's Fox Plays. With the latest Dame injury, is it time for the Bucks to trade Giannis, who is a free agent in 2027, but has a team with a cap over $72 million without Lopez, Prince, or Trent signed? No first-round pick this year. No good young player to grow. Trade Giannis and rebuild, he says. I think a lot of our brains immediately went to that last night, which is, boy, that's not going to keep Giannis around. But poor Dame, because we just, as a player, who doesn't love Dame Lillard? Who doesn't love everything he did in a Portland Trailblazers uniform, the toddler wave, leaping to mind, of course, maybe above all? It's just, it's sad to see that. If it is the end of his career, you know, that's a tough thing. If it isn't, he's probably never the same at his age. It's just a tough way to go. Dave Hormel, and by the way, we were just talking with Carl off here. The broadcast really didn't get it at first either. They're like, oh, ankle injury. And I was like, oh, no, I couldn't get up. That's probably something else. Dave Hormel, Gil, talking about Jay Glazer, talking about Shador Sanders, all the different negative sort of scouting reports he got. Stringfellow Hawk, Brown's starting quarterback could be a fifth-round pick with perceived first- or second-round value. Could the Browns be a Super Bowl contender soon with a rookie outperforming his rookie deal? Well, Stringfellow, that is the positive spin of the day. That's for sure. But I will say this, again, like I said, there are things that people love about him, right? Tremendous accuracy, throws his receivers open. But again, that comment about the comparison with Caleb was interesting. A fraction of the athlete Caleb is, for all the similarities, a fraction of the athlete that Caleb is. Samuel Robinson, Wild series. The Minnesota Wild knotted up at 2 apiece with the Vegas Golden Knights, talking about shopping around, plus 220 at a certain offshore. So definitely shop around. Andy V, on today's, oh, this is great. We'll get this with Carl here momentarily. This is a great question from Andy Vigil, who says, on today's ANG, Gil, can we get a NBA Hardo's Worry-O-Meter segment with Kelly? Well, Kelly's not in, but we'll do it with Carl here. Clips versus Denver, because, again, the NBA Hardo's love the Clippers. Houston versus Golden State, that one not so much. And Lakers versus Minnesota, yes, they love the Lakers as well. We'll get to Carl here. Matter of fact, let's get to Carl Sack here, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. He joins us now. And, of course, you can follow him at Killer Cappers and KillerSports.com. That's where he plies his trade these days. Before we even get to the NBA, we must be transparent here, Carl. Before we even got on, we chat for a few seconds, and what is it that you said? What is it that you wanted to chime in on?
Oh, as far as Jason's question about 100 men versus a gorilla, I was curious whether or not you could. I mean, I assume you can't use tools or weapons, but, you know, maybe boulders, rocks, maybe there's something that can be incorporated here that Jason's thinking about.
You can't have weapons. Weapons pollutes the whole thing. I'm just going to say this right now. It's bare hands. 100 men, bare hands. Bare hands only. Could you beat a gorilla? And the answer, Carl, just between you and me, is no chance. We have no chance. If we is the 100 men, we got no chance. Because there's not enough damage even the first wave of humans could do to one gorilla to then allow the next wave of guys to, like, win. It's that it's too strong. We can't even if we, like, had a, because we can't put together a precise military strike with just our bare hands, right? So we have no chance. No chance.
I read that a gorilla can bench press 4,000 pounds.
There you go.
Crazy.
It's because most people were like, oh yeah, the first 40 would have to bite it, but then we'd get, no, we wouldn't. No, we wouldn't at all. Okay, to the NBA playoffs. Maybe I should have asked every guest about this. To the NBA playoffs. Let me just say this. Yesterday, first of all, again to you, thank you for the VSiN Killer Sports Challenge. We're having a great time doing this. I mentioned Doug Kazarian in the lead right now at 14-3. He is getting the job done. I'm flipping coins. I'm 8-8. Kelly's in third, which is great. You're in there as well. You haven't made a lot of picks, so you're 7-4, but you've got a lot of work to do here the rest of the first round with 9 more picks. You better get to it because these series might end. Part of that is because the Knicks yesterday, and the refs admitted this in the pool report afterwards, that should have been a foul on Josh Hart against Tim Hardaway Jr. in the corner. And as a result of the non-call, the Knicks hold on and take a 3-1 lead in their best-of-7 first-round series against the Pistons. Naked eye, you thought that was a foul, didn't you?
It did look like a foul. I was okay with it going either way.
They did let him play that game, that's for sure, man. They let him play.
They certainly did.
Yeah.
And it's hard to just say, like, oh, that's the one reason we lost the game. Like, well, there were 100 other possessions.
I mean, you know, it was the other big, of course, finish of the weekend. Well, there was a couple others. There was obviously the replay review that resulted in a foul on LeBron James late in the game against the T-Wolves yesterday. It was ruled on the court, you know, just to be a possession play. And I was at an airport watching it, so I didn't have audio. So we all assumed the Lakers were getting the ball. I think most people admitted that when they were watching the broadcast, they assumed that it went off Anthony Edwards and the Lakers were getting the ball. But with replay, they called a foul. It looked like on LeBron's face that he kind of knew it was coming. Did you get that sense? And as a result, Anthony Edwards goes to the line and the T-Wolves win and take a 3-1 lead against the Lakers.
Yeah, that was really a toss-up. That could have gone either way. I actually didn't see that coming as far as the foul call initially.
I don't think most did. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the Lakers lost the timeout on that play, thus didn't have a timeout later when they probably could have used it. Yeah, that was tough. But I don't necessarily, you know, I like what Redick did with the lineup. I don't know about 24 full second half minutes, but I think that is their optimal lineup.
But for, so that's the first time it's ever happened. What Carl's alluding to, it's the first time in NBA playoff history that's ever happened where five guys played the entire second half. And we're talking LeBron, Reeves, Doncic, Dorian Finney-Smith. Who am I forgetting? Obviously the fifth.
Hachimura.
Oh, Hachimura, right. But already, even before that, when a couple other guys were playing, it's like almost all of their points were being scored by four players. And to the NBA Hardo's question that we just got from Andy Vigil on Twitter, that's not a long-term recipe for success, is it? I mean, this version of the Lakers, even if they got past the T-Wolves, this wasn't going further, was it?
You know, I think that Jackson Hayes doesn't match up well in this series. I feel like they could have given Vincent or Vanderbilt some more time just to help rest, because they were only going on one day's rest. And then Luka, you know, was in bed all day Saturday and sick and dehydrated and whatnot. And so I don't know if that was optimal to do that. But I do think that the Lakers and Minnesota are two good, very good teams that I think once you get past OKC, they're in the discussion.
Okay. And then, of course, the other fantastic finish was Saturday, which I don't think we've ever seen before, which is the dunk by Aaron Gordon right as the buzzer is sounding, right as the light is coming on the backboard. And the way that the official, you know, explained it, and he was right to explain it the way he did, is that the ball left Aaron Gordon's fingertips just before that light came on, just before the buzzer. Because if he had worded it differently, it would have left open this unbelievable possibility that the ball would have been in the hoop, but if Gordon so much as had a finger on it, it would have been discounted, which would have just been the most unbelievable thing that we'd probably ever see. It was interesting, though, in the third quarter, the end of the third quarter in the Knicks game yesterday, it kind of almost happened again, and they waved it off. So it was two consecutive days where you saw something like that. But that was unbelievable, and that knots up that series at two games apiece. So just an incredible, you know, dramatic, while the Shador thing was going on in football, it was just an amazing set of games in the NBA, or at least some of them were. What about tonight, Carl? Because we do have two games tonight. It's the remaining two game fours, if you will. Cavaliers trying to close out the Heat as 8.5-point favorites on the road. And then the Dubs, they're getting Butler back here, favored by 3.5 against the Rockets, trying to extend it to 3-1.
It sounds like Butler's going to come back. That's the gist that I'm getting. It's hard to really pull the trigger on what betting on this game until you really know for sure. Yeah. If I had to, I probably would still just back Golden State and anticipate Butler coming back. I think the best play on the board, I like Cleveland to take care of business. I think that they're probably, if I had to guess, I'm going to guess that they're going to rest Garland. No need to force him back. This series is over one way or another. I like, because Garland's out, and because of some trends that I have, that, you know, Cleveland has just shot lights out, and I think they're due for a little bit of a regression here. I think that this game's going to go under the total, and I like Cleveland to take care of business, so the natural derivative here would be a Miami team total under 101.5.
Miami team total under 101.5 as the Heat look to stave off the sweep in the Eastern Conference. Carl, thank you. Appreciate it, man. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Have a great day, Gil.
You too. The great Carl Sack, the man who had the brainchild for the VSiN Killer Sports NBA Playoff Challenge. Check it out at VSiN.com/challenge. Coming back.
Numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Looking for a new way to feel the rush this Kentucky Derby? First Bet is your front row seat to the fastest 2 minutes in sports and so much more. Bet on the Derby and hundreds of other races every day at firstbet.com. That's the number one, stbet.com. New users can use promo code VSiN200 to grab a $200 sign-up bonus. Get ready. The Derby starts at firstbet.com. Yeah, we're almost there. The first Saturday in May, quickly approaching for the Derby. Skill Alexander, we at Tweets at Beating the Book always appreciate the feedback from everyone. Chuckism 1, whoever thinks Caleb Williams is a better athlete than Shador Sanders, I have a bridge in Arizona to sell you. I'm just reporting what Todd McShay said, the scout said. Donnie Miller, 100 men versus a gorilla? Gorilla's benching 4,000 pounds? Did I oversleep and it's Friday already? Donnie is referring to our consecutive Friday discussions on picking the new Pope, betting on picking the new Pope, and WrestleMania 41, I believe, if I've got Donnie's drift correct. Judd O'Connor, 100 men versus a gorilla. The first guy better have the heart of a warrior, or he better, or the head of someone who wants to get the heck out of there and not be the first guy, that's for sure. C. Spackler, the Sanders old agent might want to look into coaching instead. Talking about, was it not Shador, but was it Shiloh who said, enough of my dad being my agent, I'm going to sign with Tampa Bay with another agent. And then, of course, there's this, which I will save. I'll actually save this because this is about the Skins moving back to RFK. But I want to get to Paul Sporer here to talk Major League Baseball, of course. But first, by the way, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line, you can follow him on Twitter, @Sporer. He works at FanGraphs. And, of course, The Sleeper and the Bust is the name of his baseball podcast. How you doing, Paul?
I'm doing well, Gil. How about yourself?
Good. I know we talked a little bit about this off air. You are obviously a big Detroit Tigers fan. You're a huge baseball fan. But as a Detroit guy by birth, if I'm not mistaken, or at least that's where you I remember your first Twitter picture was you and your dad, I want to say, with your Detroit hat on. But you're also a Pistons fan, man. You got to be pretty bent about this.
I really am. You know, they've had an amazing year. I watched a ton of hoops this year. They're a really fun team. My expectations are tempered. You know, a young team first getting there. There's usually that stair step in the NBA playoffs,
yes,
where teams take some time to get there. But it should be 2-2. Because he's not missing the free throws. Hardaway's not going to miss those free throws after he gets them. And I think it's ball game then, because he would have gotten three if I'm remembering correctly. He was behind the line.
He hits two of three. They win. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a lock. It's a darn near lock there. Now, I will say this. I disagree with what I think is kind of the consensus of don't say anything. After they admitted they got it wrong, people were mad. Well, you know, why you even say anything? I want to know that they can at least acknowledge they get it wrong. I actually despise that other leagues don't seem to let their officials acknowledge when they got something wrong. So I actually did. It doesn't do us any good. I understand that. And I'm a wee guy, so cry about it, folks. I know I'm not on the Pistons, but it's us. And I know it doesn't do the team any good, but I do think it is better to come out there and say, hey, we biffed it. It does suck. There's nothing to do about it, but at least they can acknowledge that they got it wrong. And the Pistons got to win the next one to kind of, you know, I got one at a time here now, because 3-1, 2-2, they got to get to 3-2 before they can get to 3-3, of course.
You know, lost in that, though, also, I do have to say, Carl Anthony Towns, for all those New York Knicks fans who hated having him or that trade for him, he was unbelievable yesterday.
That he and JB are making, Jalen Brunson. The tough part too, Carl Anthony Towns, quite possibly my favorite non-Piston, and I'm trying to muster up the hate for him this week. I'm just like laughing, shaking my head at all these amazing shots that he's hitting. I do, in fact, sports hate Jalen Brunson because this dude does not miss. He makes the most crazy shots ever. But Cat, I've always loved him. He's gotten heat undeservedly. I agree with you there. And so I'm like, damn. If they do win... if the Knicks do win, I'm going to be rooting for them to keep going, because I really do like Carl Anthony Towns quite a bit.
He and Jalen Brunson, obviously, Jalen Brunson, the clutch player of the year in the NBA, just amazing down the stretch in that game. To baseball, I've asked you about this before. We're not even at May yet. I have to ask you again. The Rockies are 4-23. quick math, multiply by 6, 24-138, I believe. On pace.
Wow, you did that off the dome. That's impressive.
Yeah, 24. Well, the 24 was easy. 138, I had to do a little subtraction there at the end. But they're not going to, I mean, I say this, so there's a little voice in my head that's going like, are you sure you want to say this? But they're going to win more than 24, right? The question is, how bad is bad? Have you seen, I mean, where does this rank, just on sight for you, these first 27 games, where does this rank for you in terms of like worst teams you've seen?
I mean, it's up, and we just got done watching the worst team with the White Sox, of course, and I'm not sure that this team isn't worse by like a tangible margin. What do they have? What can you cling to? There's a few fantasy relevant guys out there. Brenton Doyle, big fan of him, legitimate, really good center fielder, good hitter. McMahon, kind of a stalwart veteran type now. Hunter Goodman, kind of an on the rise guy. I'm out of names after that, Gil, with Ezekiel Tovar on the IL. I don't have anything else to really hang my hat on. Chase Dolander, interesting pitcher, but he's a pitcher in Colorado. So how much can he really turn their fate? Like, what have they got going? And here's the really difficult part. That division. Now, they are lucky that the schedule isn't the way it used to be, or maybe they would only win 24. But it is still an unbalanced schedule favored toward your division. People think it's balanced, meaning it's you play everyone the same now. You still play your division more. You just don't play them each like 18, 19 times, whatever it used to be. But that division is going to beat the living hell out of them the exact way the White Sox took it last year. That's why there were so many AL Central playoff teams. You have to acknowledge that the White Sox were a big role in that. So the Rockies, they're in so much trouble right now. I don't know that they'll set a new lowest record beating the White Sox, but they're going to be around there. I don't have high hopes that they're going to make a major transition.
Also, am I wrong? This is now going back to Sacramento now. Am I wrong to love watching games in Sacramento? I love like lots of scoring. General, obviously didn't happen yesterday, but man, I'm really enjoying watching a scrappy team like that in what is an offensive environment, typically when they're fly ball pitchers. So like, I thought I would think this was one big joke, but I actually really enjoy it.
No, I enjoy it too. And I think part of why we both enjoy it is that there's a lack of offense in the game right now. You know, with so many strikeouts, it's the classic three true outcomes game, homer, walk, strikeout. And, you know, let's see some offense here. And this is an upstart, interesting team playing in Sacramento. They're not called Sacramento, but they're playing in Sacramento. This Athletics team is really fun. They've got an offense that's really interesting. Bringing up Nick Kurtz this past week gives them their best prospect to go with the guys that were already hitting very well. They've got some compelling pitchers. I still have a hard time kind of seeing the path to the playoffs without just a ton of good luck with the health, because I don't think that the pitching's there. But that offense is one to watch, and they are fun to watch. And I found myself watching a lot more Athletics games than I expected to this year because of that offense.
Me too, and a lot of it has to do with the fact that I'm betting on it a lot. This is the MLB, by the way. Do we have these guys, the updated Major League Baseball March-April win standings, obviously with 3 days left in April. Right now, remember, there were markers. There was March, April, and then there, at one shop, it was just April alone. April alone is between the Mets and your Tigers, who are both 17-7, followed by the Giants, who are 16-9. I was never going to bet into that. I was going to bet into the March, April, and I did. I bet the Twins. It was an awful play. I had the Mets first to 10. Oh, boy, am I going to regret it if the Mets win it. But the current March, April standings going into the last 3 days, the Mets are 19-9, three games left, one at Washington, two versus Arizona. San Francisco's 19-10 with only two games left, both at San Diego. The Dodgers and Tigers, your Tigers both 18-10. The Dodgers have three home games against the Marlins. The Tigers have three at Houston. The Mets gacked a big lead yesterday to the Nationals. They lose 8-7. That might end up being the difference maker at Circa, the tiebreaker is fewest wins, followed by run differential. But do I feel like that I'm right that the Dodgers might be in the driver's seat right here?
100% in the driver's seat with three against Miami, one of the easiest teams to beat for them. And I know they're not playing the funny thing is too, you hear a lot of consternation about the Dodgers. Are they okay? They're losing a lot of series. They're 18-10, like, because they're not like, you know, 28-0, or I guess that, yeah, no, that'd be 28-0. I can do math. You know, people are acting like there's any trouble with them. No, they're fine. And they have the easiest schedule by far of the ones that you just named there. And my Tigers are probably second because Houston just has not been that good yet. I'm not going to bury them. I think, you know, and they're still lurking, but I think it would be Dodgers, Tigers, and then Giants, Mets. I think even with the Mets being up there, I don't know. Like, that Washington team is scrappy, as we saw yesterday, and then Arizona's awesome. So I don't love their setup there. I guess they do get to face Corbin Burns, which used to not be something that you would say as a positive, but right now it kind of is. So yeah, that's kind of how I'd handicap it. Dodgers, Tigers, Giants, Mets from here on out for the March April standings.
DFS in 20 seconds or less. What do you got? What are some tips?
Well, there's a Colorado game, but don't take any of the Rockies because they stink. So get all of your Braves in there. My boy Jack Flaherty going into Houston against those Astros, and Bailey Ober going to Cleveland, and of course Dustin May against Miami. So you got some top end pitchers. You got a Colorado game to get into, and then Yankees against Tomoyuki Sugano. I don't really believe in his ERA or WHIP. He allows way too much contact.
Paul, you're the best. Appreciate it, man. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Gil. Take care.
Paul Spohr, everybody. Bent correctly about the Pistons. We'll come back. Wes Reynolds and I wax on about the Skins coming back to the district. Next on A Numbers Game.